Careful.
We're good. A few weeks ago, I went looking for gold. I was slipping down a mountain in the Plumas National Forest in Northern California. It had been snowing that morning.
So we're walking through the cedar trees, and it's kind of misty and foggy as the sun hits the snow. And I'm sliding around.
I'm following a guy named Josh Renke through the forest. Big, tall guy with a beanie and a beard. He's carrying this big wide pan. It looks like something you might make a stir fry in. We get down the hill. Oh my goodness, I hear the creek. I see the creek. There's this little island in the stream. I'm gonna just hop over. We get over the rocks. Josh takes the gold pan, scoops up some muddy gravel.
Let's do it.
Put in the water.
And I have to tell you, the sunlight is just falling on this pan like it's some sort of miracle. We've got goldish colored things.
Don't jinx it.
Okay.
And then I see it glittering. Oh my goodness.
Some small, really small pieces. See that right there?
Yeah.
That's
I see it.
It's a little piece of gold.
It's gold.
Yeah.
It's gold. Listening back, I sort of sound like Gollum in Lord of the Rings. But that's what gold does to you.
There's three little pieces, four or five, six right there. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Yeah. So. Okay. So can I say it?
You can say it.
Eureka!
I found it.
So I'm super excited at these specks of gold, this trace amount, but Josh isn't impressed.
At that point, you know, of course, I would do more research.
Oh, you just threw it away.
Yeah. Throw it back. Let it get bigger.
Okay.
It actually doesn't get bigger.
Come on. Julia, we sent you out west to make us rich, and you and Josh, you're throwing away our treasure?
Nick, what Josh threw away was just a tiny bit. But if we want to mine any of that gold, we need to stake a claim.
And this part of the process is amazing to me. To stake a claim, you literally need a stake.
I could also use a pole or just a pile of rocks, but today I'm going to use a stick.
What about this one? It's way too long.
Okay, just broke it.
Here we go. I'm going to take this thing.
Putting it in the dirt.
Yep.
And we stick some paperwork on it. A mining claim location notice. It says who we are and where we are and the date.
Okay, so we're gonna put it in a plastic bag, seal it against the elements.
Cool. So all we have to do is put a stick in the ground, fill out a form, and we're gonna be millionaires, right?
No. First, I have to pay. The thing is, the price I'm going to pay, it's what I paid for dinner last night. $15. I'm going to pay $15 an acre. At prices like this, why just get 1 acre? Let's get 40.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Nick Fountain.
And I'm Julia Simon, the proud owner of the mining rights for 40 acres of prime gold country. For not a lot of money.
Which, can I say, that is crazy. You did what? One day of work, you're about to pony up not a lot of money, and you get to mine this land for a year. And even if you find tons of gold, you won't have to pay the government a penny more in royalties.
Getting the rights to dig up gold in the U.S. today, it's not all that different than it was during the gold rush. Neither are the prices. Today on the show, how has this system stayed the same for almost 150 years? Why is the country giving away its gold on public land?
And copper.
And silver. And platinum.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and waiting for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter can help. Their technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/planetmoney. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. There are lots of places to debate today's issues if you don't mind getting attacked for speaking your mind or asking a simple question. But 1A is different. You'll find the 1A podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So once you've got the wooden stake in the ground, you take a copy of your claim, you go down to the local office of the Bureau of Land Management, and you register your claim.
The one that handles the Plumas National Forest, the forest I went to, it's in Sacramento.
Hi.
Who are you here to see?
The Bureau of Land Management. I'm making a mineral claim. We found gold.
Oh, okay. So you're lucky, huh?
Yeah.
Inside in the office, I meet Gary Catledge, super friendly, jean sweatshirt. He helps me make sure I didn't claim anyone else's land.
It was on a stream that flowed into it.
We had a bit of trouble finding my spot in the beginning.
Here, let's figure this out. I'm looking at a map.
You think you're interested in this piece right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
That so, says, what creek does it say? It says Creek. Wait, can you move your finger for a sec?
We found my spot. It was in Yuba County. Then we went online to make sure that no one else had claimed it. We were good.
Hi, yeah, I'm gonna pay for a mining claim.
Okay.
Here's the stuff.
You came a long way to file your claim.
I certainly did, just like the old time.
Just like the old times. If this seems like a system that was designed by prospectors in the mid-1800s, that's because it kind of was. Imagine, 1848, we find gold in California. A bunch of guys rush out west looking to get rich, and they make up this system to make sure that no one gets killed over another person's gold claim.
One of these gold miners, he becomes a lawyer, a senator, he goes to Washington, and once he gets there, he formalizes the system he saw out west. He writes a law, the Mining Act of 1872.
And it's important to remember that back when the miners found gold, California wasn't even a U.S. state. In the mid-1800s, the U.S. was all about westward expansion, and the government wanted to make it as easy and as cheap as possible for people to go out west, find gold, and settle down. And this law, it was part of that effort.
The thing is, I came into a public forest and staked this claim for cheap, but it's not just amateur prospectors that are doing it. There are billion-dollar corporations also getting the same deal.
It's a ripoff. It's a ripoff of the taxpayer.
Tom Udall, senator from New Mexico, not a fan of the Mining Act of 1872.
Just think about it. The public owns this land. This is a resource sitting on public land.
Udall is part of a group of lawmakers who are working to reform this law. They want to change this old system and the low fees. But what they're really looking to change is the way the federal government gets paid for mining that happens on federal lands. They want the mining companies to pay these things called royalties.
Royalties. Lots of companies take lots of valuable things out of the ground. Oil, for one, natural gas, coal. And when they make money off those things, they pay some of that money back to the government. That's what royalties are.
Udall says in most places in the world, mining companies do pay royalties. But in America, mining companies don't pay royalties to the federal government, and we don't even know how much they're taking out.
In 2011, I asked the GAO for the numbers on how much the taxpayers are being shortchanged. They couldn't say. Not only do the hard rock mining companies not pay, they don't disclose. And under current law, they don't have to. We don't know how much they extract from federal lands. We don't know where the minerals are sold. And we don't know overall value.
There was one report, though. In 2014, a House committee added up what they could find from publicly traded mines, and they figured that in 1 year, companies had taken at least $5 billion worth of gold, silver, copper, all these other minerals, out of public lands.
Last year, Udall sponsored a bill to reform the 1872 mining law. It would increase some fees and introduce a 2-5% royalty, which could raise at least $100 million a year. But it hasn't gone far.
We always knew, I mean, and I knew from the beginning when I got into the House and then came into the Senate, when you put in a bill on 1872 mining law reform, you were going to have huge opposition from the mining industry. You always had that big block of Western senators who just said, no, we're not doing this. And they were really acting on behalf of the mining companies.
Western senators. I feel like Tom Udall is trying not to name names, but Julia, you know who he's talking about.
I think I know one of the guys he's talking about. Harry Reid. He was the most powerful man in the Senate, Senate Majority Leader, from Nevada. He stepped down last year. I made a request to talk to Reid about mining, and I thought it would be formal, a lot of policy talk. It was not what I was expecting. First off, he invited me to his house.
So we're going through the gates. Hi.
Hello.
Gonna see Senator Harry Reid?
And you're all set.
Harry Reid lives in this gated community near Las Vegas. Outside, there's a pond full of ducks flying in and out. Security detail took me to the door.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Reid shows me around his house. His father was a gold miner, he tells me. He has a bunch of his old stuff. He pulls what looks like a headlamp off a bookshelf.
You know what a carbide lamp is?
It's a lamp they used to use in mines. Creates a flame using water and carbide. No oxygen. Useful in a mine.
Oh, you can smell that. Say it's carbide's in there.
Oh, whoa. Yeah, I definitely smell that.
His house is like a museum of mining. There are these photos on the wall of his hometown. It's an old mining town called Searchlight. When he was little, he used to go down into the mines with his dad.
What I would say, keep him company. Because he worked, it was illegal, but he worked alone in the mines, but nobody ever came, or not often. And I can remember, as a boy in Searchlight, my dad would lay on a couch, and my mother would pick rocks out of his back that were there. My dad had silicosis from quartz in the rock that he worked in, and he coughed every night. I just thought all kids' dads coughed.
He shows me this rock in a glass frame hanging on the wall.
That is a very high-grade ore.
It looked like a rock. I wouldn't have noticed it anywhere else. But this one, his dad gave it to him.
And he found it at the Blossom Mine. And it's in talc and had nuggets in it. Anyway, that doesn't mean much to anybody but me. My father committed suicide. And he was a fairly young man. And he gave me this the week before he killed himself.
If Harry Reid's house was a mining museum, the stories in it, they were not happy stories.
If I heard those stories, it would make me think that you wouldn't like mining, you know?
Well, I like mining. I wish I could give you a love story that didn't mine, but I can't do that. Mining is harsh and many times cruel. I had my own carbide lamp, followed my dad around, watched him drill holes and rock and do all the horribly difficult, hard things he has to do. And so I have warm feelings about my memories of my dad.
In the early 80s, Harry Reid came to Washington, and he was from Nevada, this mining state. He has this deep connection to mining, and obviously mining super important for Nevada. He realized if he didn't defend the mining law, it was going to change, and it was going to hurt the mining industry. So he went to the mining companies, and he told them they needed to get organized.
They had no presence in Washington, zero. I met them in Reno, Nevada, all the bosses. And I said, you better start being interested in what's going on in Washington. You're going to wind up losing everything. And I told them, you're going to have to start dirtying your hands and coming to Washington, meetings with some of these senators.
Which senators would you tell them to meet with?
Well, the ones that weren't on my side.
Every once in a while, people would look around and ask the same question we're asking today. Driving stakes into something, that sounds like a way to vanquish a vampire. This isn't the 1800s. We have computers. We have fancy serving equipment. Why is this law still on the books? We need to update it, put in some royalties.
And Harry Reid would be there saying, you can't just tweak this thing. That would be unfair to mining companies. You senators, you don't understand mining. It has to be comprehensive reform.
Comprehensive reform is a classic Washington stalling move.
Well, time and time again, reform would come up and it would go nowhere.
Everyone knew nothing would happen. Doesn't matter.
Really?
Of course. I was there. They couldn't change the law. Unless I agreed, and I wouldn't agree.
Why are you smiling?
Well, that's, the law went and didn't go anyplace.
And it wouldn't because you wouldn't let it?
Well, I didn't like it.
Okay, but Harry Reid is gone now. He's retired.
So Udall and some other lawmakers, they're at it again. They're actually trying to push a reform bill through right now. But Harry Reid, he knew he was going to retire someday. And this mining lobby he helped organize, because of it, this reform bill doesn't really have a chance. In the meantime, the mining law of 1872, it's still on the books.
Julia, you went out west, you went mining, because you wanted to figure out the answer to a question, really, right? You wanted to figure out why the mining law is the same as it was just after the Civil War. And I think you found the answer.
I think it's partly because of this old narrative. When we think about the mining law, who it was designed for, we think of people like Harry Reid's dad, a guy with his son and his carbide lamp, or we think of me and Josh and the gold pan and the stakes. But we're imagining the wrong characters. The real characters in the story today, they're big mining companies. Yes, mining is still about being rugged, entrepreneurial, you have to go out and dig, but the money at stake, it's not about the little guys. Not anymore.
After the break, we try to get out of the gold industry.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Delta Airlines, offering the Fly Delta app, where eligible customers will now be automatically checked in 24 hours before a scheduled departure. Delta is always striving to take the stress out of travel so you can focus on what comes next.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about On Point, the NPR show where we take you behind the headlines. On Point talks with newsmakers and real people about issues that matter most. Listen to On Point now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hey, Josh?
Yeah, this is him.
A few weeks after I staked my claim, I got on the phone with Josh, the guy who helped me find gold in California. And I had to admit something. When we were in California, you know, we found the gold. I was so excited. I got gold fever. But I think I got a little carried away.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. You know, I live in New York and I have a job. I can't go I can't go back to California and prospect on that land.
Okay.
Julia, you're really trying to dump this claim.
Yeah, I tried to get him to buy it then and there. He wasn't up for it, but he said he would ask around.
What I can do is talk to my partners and see, maybe we can find someone in the group that's trusted that would put up the money to do that. So I can work on that.
Well, thank you so much, Josh. Appreciate it.
If you want to buy our gold claim, let us know, planetmoney@npr.org. No low balls, please. Today's episode was produced by Lena Richards and Sally Helm. Our editor is Brian Erdstedt, and our supervising producer is Alex Goldmark.
Special thanks to John Leshy, John Lacey, Luke Danielson, Jim Kress, and all the other gold prospectors I talked to out west.
I'm Nick Fountain.
And I'm Julia Simon. Thanks for listening.